Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Lynn is off this week. This morning, we're talking with writer Andrea Simon, author of several award-winning books and the recipient of numerous literary awards, including the Ernest Hemingway First Novel Contest, 2 Dorstor Creative Writing Awards, the Stark Short Fiction Prize, and Authors in the Park Short Story Writing Contest. She holds an MFA in creative writing from the City College of New York, where she has taught writing and mentored many writers. Today, we'll be discussing her latest novel, entitled Did You Have the Life You Wanted? It's an anthem to the life-affirming power of female friendship and asks the question that we all will perhaps find ourselves pondering one day, if not at the moment, of did we have the life we wanted? Andrea Simon, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, at one point in booking you for this interview, I mistakenly emailed in your main character's name, Anita, instead of your name, Andrea.
Did she answer?
Yeah, I think it might be because the story is told in your book from such an honest, personal way that it feels like a nonfiction memoir. How much does Andrea's story mirror your own life's path?
Well, a lot of people have said that, even people who I know claim that they remember all these things, and it's usually something that I've made up. But I think I've written all different types of books, from memoir to more fictional things. And this is sort of a combination. I call it autobiographical fiction because it's somewhat based on things that happened to me, especially highlighting the 1970s, a time in when I lived in Greenwich Village during the heyday of revolution and all kinds of feminist change. So it's based on some things that happened to me, and certainly the terrain and where I lived is realistic. But really, the characters are a combination of real people and not real people. Some are totally fictionalized, and some one interview said it's like Forrest Gump. She appears in all kinds of things, but truly, in my own personal life, I was around during a lot of these things. So we didn't realize how important they were until you look back on it. So I would say that I am not Anita, but she's similar to me. maybe we're friends, you know, or twins or something.
I hear authors discuss that, where their character takes a turn that they didn't expect.
Yeah.
How much of your characters do you find have kind of a life of their own? Like, what does that feel like?
I think it's what I strive for, really. I feel like if I could get to the point where the characters do things that I haven't done or they surprise me, I feel like I've really created somebody different, and she stands on her own feet. And sometimes, in a way, it's like reliving your life in a different way as an older person, and maybe you're sort of correcting things fictionally that happened to you. And I get to the point where sometimes I'm not sure if something happened to me or I wrote about it.
Oh my God. Well, in the book, your descriptions are so visceral. They're just so sensorially, if that is a word, rich, that you really feel like you're in that moment. As a writer, do you find yourself noting things all the time? Or is this just being able to evoke those senses and the feelings? Is that just part of your skill set?
I think both. You know, after all these years, I'm very aware of my physical environment and how it changes. Even I mentioned that we were in the country this weekend, and I was noticing the shapes of how the snow was adhering to the branches of the fir trees. And I was thinking, what would be a good word to describe it? Would it be... it's not really cotton. Maybe it's three-pronged cotton. I was thinking of the best way to describe it, as if I was writing this. So I think some of the observation, I'm also a photographer, so I'm very visual. And when I write anything, I usually have photographs around me, either of the actual place or a place that I decided was the actual place, or if it's a historical memoir of some kind, I do research and find it. And I try to imagine the main characters, what they look like. I'm very careful about describing them. And I write a whole page on each character, what they look like, what they did. So I think very visually. is what I'm saying. That's the way I look at life, and not just in a superficial way, but in a way that sort of tries to capture something about the physical environment that says something about these people.
Yeah. Well, I can appreciate that as a photographer, that you're able to see literally through that lens as well. But it's not even just that, it's the smells, and you describe like the feeling of nylon and gravel and different things that really puts you as a reader into the moment in an effective way. And it kind of makes me, in the same way that like Philip Roth novels, makes me feel like I get a little window into New York in certain eras. Do you...
Well, sensory description is very important. You want your readers to really feel like they're there, and but you don't want to overwhelm them also with so much detail that they lose the story. So it's a very hard balance to try and make it. But I always try, through some kind of sensory experience, to root the reader, not on a conscious level, but to make them realize where they are. And in this book, New York is definitely a character, and Greenwich Village in particular.
Oh, 100%.
I wanted people to actually walk those streets with me.
If you're just joining the program, we're talking with author Andrea Simon, who's written a recent book called Did You Have the Life You Wanted? Your book touches on these revolutionary events of the time, school strikes, feminism, Stonewall Inn, Attica, Vietnam. Those were such pivotal things in retrospect. What current events do you think we might someday see with a similar resonance?
Well, people have asked me that too, to compare what's happening today to those days. Excuse me. I heard Joan Baez say recently, she was asked a similar question, and she said that she thought the times today were a lot worse. Maybe she's talking from she's speaking of from an older person's perspective, obviously, but she felt that in the 60s and 70s, young people had a sense of hope that they could actually change things, and that they could improve things, which they did. They stopped the war, and they got feminine some rights, you know, that lives changed. And now I see so many, it's like you can't keep up with the events, you know, without being political. So many things happen on a daily basis that are almost shocking, and that it's hard to keep up with it. It's hard to, there are many things that if they happened in the 60s and 70s, you would remember them as isolating incidents. But because it happens with such frequency, I think it gets normalized and it gets watered down, and people are afraid, are so mired in fear that they don't speak out against these things.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's talk about the book specifically. How did you choose the title, Did You Have the Life You Wanted? It's such an interesting title. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, it seemed to come organically. I think also, you know, as an older person, and I've had this feeling my whole life, but as an older person, we tend to look back on our life. So that's part of it. But certainly in my day, my parents were not doing what they wanted to do professionally. You know, they were products of, well, some immigration and some the Depression era. And they were more interested in a job that gave them security. They didn't think of going after something that they wanted to do. And I always felt that both of them were very intelligent, interesting people who were very unhappy with their life choices. And I always said to myself, I don't want to be that way. I mean, it was like a reverse modeling. And I don't want to be in the position where I'm going to look back at my life and say, I should have done this, I should have done that, I should have done this. And I also grew up in an era where we didn't have much choices as women. You know, when I was in college, the college counselor asked what I wanted to major in and what I was interested in. And when I told him my interests, which were all creative, he said, become a teacher. There's nothing else for a woman. You know, and
teacher, secretary, nurse, right?
Right, right. It depends. But if you went to college, you were a teacher or a social worker. So it wasn't until I was in my 60s when I went back to school from my MFA that I became a teacher, and I actually love it. But I rebelled against that because it was told, you know. So I look back on my professional career, and it wasn't until I was in my 40s and 50s that I said I was writing in publishing. I was a copywriter. I was a reporter. I had my own business. I did all these things, but I wasn't doing my own writing. I was really writing for clients. And I looked back and I said, if I don't do my own writing now, I'll never do it. And that's what I tried to correct, but you can't really correct something because you're a different person, you know. But I can at least say in my own looking back that I tried, you know.
Yeah. It's easy to understand how an older person at the more advanced stage of life is looking back and asking, did I have the life I wanted? How can younger people who might read this book be more aware of their life as it's unfolding in real time and what that's meaning to the resonance that might occur later?
Well, I really, in a way, wrote this book for young people because I wrote two books about the Holocaust based on some family history. And I realized then that young people do not really know what went on. You know, they hear very superficial things. And I always felt if they really knew, especially personal stories of real people, they could relate to it maybe, and maybe they could make at least informed decisions. And now I see anti-Semitism is rising again. Kids are ill-informed about their history. And I feel like there are so many lessons of the 1960s and 70s that are relevant today. And I wanted, especially young women, to see what we went through, you know, fighting for women's rights and our own rights, and to have some appreciation for that, and to try to be inspired by that idea that they should not do things for other reasons, and try to expand their own horizons as much as they possibly can. It's very hard to do nowadays. My daughter is a documentary filmmaker, and every grant is dried up. It's so difficult to be a creative person from other points of view. But I'm glad that she's doing what she wants to do. But I'm sad that she has to face all these ridiculous obstacles.
I have heard this from other documentary filmmakers that it has never been quite this bleak.
Yes.
And even with Sundance, that was always a real champion of documentaries and funding all over the place.
Funding has dried up in the creative world, period. You know, in all of our creative pursuits. And when you're an artistic person, I find myself, it's a different personality to create and work within your own internal world and then go out and promote yourself and even have to ask for people for money or ask for people for reviews. You know, I definitely beg people for reviews and then feel ridiculous, you know, to have to put yourself in that position. But it takes a different kind of personality, and you have to realize that when you're going into it.
You're so right. You have to become much more of a jack of all trades now.
Yeah.
Like at one point, you could do your craft, your art, and then there were layers of support.
Right.
Jobs
and I'm very worried about young people in the writing world who are relying. I see it all the time on AI. And I'm being bombarded by scammers who are, let's say, going to AI, looking up one of my books, and then giving me a two-page summation of my books. And then you think, oh, they read it. Isn't that nice? And then you realize this is all a scam, you know. And you have to be aware of the dangers and pitfalls. And maybe because I'm an older person, I keep saying, don't be online all the time. Don't put everything into AI. Try to use old-fashioned skills. Think about what you're doing. Keep a journal. Keep writing, physically writing. But, you know, I've fallen into the internet myself. It's very hard to not be in it, you know. It's balance. It's all about balance and trying to keep your mind open, really.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes this makes me sound old, but that today's youth are like those like water spiders that are just like skimming on the surface, and they kind of move real fast and jumpy in a way that like the deep slow dives that I don't know. I seem to remember just like going down a rabbit hole of reading. And when I found an author I loved, I'd read everything they'd written. And I would try to write it myself. I'd try to like emulate it. You can't help but soak it in. And I feel like it's just surface right now. And I just, maybe it's an attention span shift that, of course, we hear about, but
I think
it's a
attention
tough
span, it's
time.
a different way of consuming information. You consume information in little bits, you know, and it's very enticing. It's enticing. If I can't fall asleep, it's very enticing for me to put on Facebook videos and look at, you know, animals giving birth, you know, or whatever it is. I just saw
cute bunnies.
A camel giving birth or whatever it is. Yeah. And then you think, what am I doing? You know, I could be reading a really good book. But so it's lazy thinking, you know, I feel bad because I try to pay attention to young people. And, you know, I try with my grandsons to do board games I just taught them cursive writing, and I'm sure they'll never use it, but you know, I'm trying to.
No, you know what? There is a little pushback from the kids. Like both of my sons have record players and they love playing vinyl. And I asked them about that. And I said, like it was such a revelation for my generation to be able to get any song, but they're like, no, I kind of like being locked in to one album for 45 minutes and not having all those choices all the time. And I think that's pretty telling that
tell
they're
them to
looking
call me.
For
I have
songs.
A huge vinyl collection. It has a lot of skips in it, you know.
You might just become the most popular lady in your building because kids are loving the vinyl.
Well, even in photography, I was doing black and white processing. I had a dark room and I would lock myself in the dark room for hours. And I would spend maybe, I don't know, 3 hours on one photograph to make sure that the light was right and all that. And then, of course, the digital world happened. And I ended up donating my entire dark room to a school that was giving like a course on the old fashioned way of doing photography. And I feel bad about that. Maybe there'll be some people who are interested in it, you know, for old time's sake, but there was a beauty to it that is lost in this world. And, you know, you don't want to be an old person who just says, oh, things were better then, because they weren't in so many ways. But I don't want young people to not appreciate them. Or not pursue things that are similar to them. Maybe they won't be developing pictures, but they're a certain way of looking at photographs that maybe are more involving than just snapping pictures all the time. You know,
for
like
sure.
what is a good scene composed of, and how is lighting affecting it, and what makes a good composition? You know, not just.
Like not shooting fish in a barrel and just throwing things against the wall, seeing what sticks.
There is an
art.
Yeah, well, there could be other arts that replace that. You know, I mean, there are certainly people who make great videos, and that's an art. It can be an art. It's not always an art. So there are other things that replace what you used to do, but you don't want those values to be disappearing.
There's one discussion point that came up that was, it made me think, most of us don't lose our need for approval and love from our parents, even as adults.
Of course, it gets worse.
How can we navigate that tricky family terrain, both for people who are gone and still with us? There's a section where how to write about your mom without guilt. So when you're writing about people who are important to you, but maybe you have complex relationships with, how do you approach that?
Well, as you mentioned, that was the title of an online course that I taught, followed by a course that I was called Writing About Your Family and Have Them Talk to You Afterward. So because I had written a memoir that was published in 2002, I was very conscious of writing about your family and how to write about them and not to overstep and not to reveal too much, and how to disguise people, and all those issues that you worry about all the time. And I went through a lot with that, and I realized that I have two writing groups. One was formed from the course I taught, How to Write About Your Mom Without Guilt. I realized that our mothers were always hovering over our conversations, whether they were living or not, especially in the 1970s. Anita talks about that in the book, that most of their topics, used to have a topic in their group talk, and it was always about how I'm like my mother or how I'm not like my mother. You know, so it seemed to be a topic that never went away. And so when I designed this course, I had an immediate registration. And it you know, after maybe an hour of introductions, we were talking about the worst things that our mothers ever did to us, you know, and it was, and it really bonded us. We were from all over the country, and we even had somebody from Australia. And we started writing essays about our mothers. And then when the course was over, nobody wanted to leave. So we continued to meet as a regular writing group, but we enlarged our repertoire to go beyond our mothers. And we ended up publishing an anthology of our stories. So that's one of my books that I talk about. But we still wrote about our mothers in other ways, you know, of how they influenced her and how many of us had mothers that we wrote essays about their lives and how our lives changed. And so I think even as older women, and these women were just not just my age, they were in their 50s and 60s too, but it was a universal theme that these mothers, whether they were good mothers or not good mothers, or whether they had positive influences or not, they really seemed to hover over us always. And for my own mother, I think about her all the time with her influence, and I think it's always in my mind. And as a mother myself, I try to be relevant and not just somebody that you have to worry about as an older person. So I don't know, I got lost in your question for some reason.
No. I think that you're doing a fine job of staying relevant and not just being a person that anyone needs to worry about.
Yeah.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I, as such an accomplished and skillful writer, are there a couple little nuggets of wisdom that you especially like to pass on to emerging writers?
Well, it's funny that you asked, because the first time I was teaching, at City College in New York, which is a city university, and I don't know the exact percentage, but I would say it's probably around 85% immigrant population. And in the days that I was teaching there, it was shortly after 9/11, I had a lot of Muslim students. I had some Chinese students, especially a girl that I think of all the time, who was shunned by her family because she was a girl. And and they were writing for the first time in their life these so personal and wonderful things, and terrified that their families would read it. So and at the end of the course, one girl said to me, "I'm changing my major to writing." And my heart fell. It hurt for me because I was very flattered, because she was really a wonderful writer, but I worried about her making a living and having to go through all this thing. So I in essence didn't say, "Oh, don't do that." But I said, have another job just in case, have a backup plan, and don't ever think of writing to make money. Don't think of writing to satisfy some type of publishing goal. If it does, that's icing on the cake. But if, you know, when I meet people who are younger and say, "Oh, I want to write a best-selling novel," I say, "I can't help you, you know. But if you want to write something that's meaningful, I'm there." So I guess that's my advice, is follow your heart. If you feel like you have an interest in writing, don't be afraid of it. You know, go for it. I mean, I have so many people that have advanced degrees, and they call me up and they have to write something for some official purpose. And they'll say, "How do I do this? And how do I do that? I'm so afraid of putting it down." And I always say to them, "Tell me what you want to say." And they're perfectly fine. And then I said, "Okay, print it." You know, because nice. People have it, but there's fear. I don't want people to be afraid. So I guess that's my advice, is to follow your heart, try and do what you want to do for the right reasons, and have a backup plan. You know?
Fantastic. And if people want to find out more about you or your other books, where can they find that?
Well, I have a website, andreasimon.net. There are about 5 different Andrea Simons that I've heard of, who are writers and photographers, but you'll find me at the net one. Okay. And it's a very comprehensive website. I have a page about each book that I've written with reviews and how to order information. Then I have a section of short stories and other types of writings, interviews, and some photography as well. So I'm hoping that people will be interested to look there. And I'm on social media all over the place. So
wonderful. And I'm sure they can get the links from your site as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Or just my name, and eventually you'll find the right entry assignment.
Okay. Well, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. We've been talking with Andrea Simon, author of a new novel, Did You Have the Life You Wanted? And there's so many things to touch on. It's a beautiful novel, and it is really puts you back across this whole arc of time. So if you are looking for something really engrossing, this is a terrific book to pick up. Ms. Simon, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks so much, Mary Beth. It was fun to talk to you.